All right, welcome to another edition of the Helm Studio Craft Podcast. I am Scott.
I am Tippins.
Tippins, what's up, buddy?
Nothing much.
Good week.
Great week.
Yeah.
We're hoping to release some music by the end of the year.
Nice. So are you guys going to do an EP or something? Or an album?
It might be like full, just release it all. And
wow.
We got like, 15 to 20 songs.
Wow.
But
that's
a lot
huge.
Of them are like kind of still half-baked, but I'm going like pedal to the metal to like make them sound decent before we put them out.
Wow, that's fantastic. That's a lot of output, man.
Yeah. Well, it's been like a year and a half,
right,
2 years
of almost. You guys working together.
Yeah. At least.
Yeah. That's really exciting.
It's phase.
Are you going to just put them all out at once, or do you think you'll stagger them?
I'm trying to maximize... Or I'm trying to get on Spotify new artist playlist.
Right.
So I'm submitting.
How are you doing that?
So if you submit them to Spotify with enough leeway, like 2-3 weeks.
Sure.
I think like, a month is like ideal. I'm not sure what's ideal, but if you give them enough leeway, you can get on like Spotify new indie playlists or rock playlists.
That's
new music.
Fantastic.
So just giving that a shot.
But they're gonna if they like it, then they'll do it, right?
Yeah. And so I'm thinking about doing we're thinking about doing two singles with it. I have made like two AI music videos.
Mm-hmm.
For them. So
how they come out?
They're pretty cool. Yeah. They're pretty cool.
I had a buddy of mine he did a bunch of AI videos for his. He's got a metal band. It's cool. I mean, it definitely fit the material. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes a while. I think we've talked about it a little bit on here, but you gotta, edit each prompt and, but it's fun,
That's cool.
Yeah. The marketing side of it is different, I do that like wig thing on social media sometimes.
I think it looks great.
Yeah, I think it's.
You guys are funny, man.
I get more views with the wig.
Do you really?
So yeah.
Well, what is that telling you, man?
People want the wig.
They want the wig. Is that the blonde one?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's hilarious. I think
Me
it's
too.
Great.
It's different,
Yeah.
If you're scrolling, you stop.
What gave you that idea? Or are you guys just fucking around?
Something different on social media than like, just looking like another guy in his bedroom playing.
Right.
You could do like lights or something, but that's expensive.
I like that.
Like a $10 wig.
I like that video that you guys had where you're just kind of like sitting up front there with a wig on. Then there's Nunez in the back.
Yeah, just doing like backing vocals and acoustic. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really funny.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. Yeah. It would definitely, it made me want to watch it. So
I think it's something that makes people stop and they remember you as the wig guy, or a lot of people think it's real. Like I've gotten comments before from like guys being like, cut your hair,
nice hair, dude.
Yeah,
they said cut your hair.
Yeah, on some guy on Facebook
reply?
Marketplace. We were already arguing about something on Facebook.
Oh really?
Marketplace, and he's like, nice hair.
I'm nice hair.
It's a wig.
What a dork.
Yeah.
Right.
But
anyway, let's we want to talk a little bit today about EQ, specifically the EQ8 app in Ableton and some of the most common EQ filters that are out there. So I know when I first started recording and mixing, like EQ was always, like the most challenging part of like getting started. So I think we could like today just kind of run over like some basic filters within EQ and what they're used for. So let's start off with two of the most confusingly named filters, high pass filter and low pass filter. Let's start off with a high pass filter. So whenever you see high pass filter or the acronym HPF, right? Always think of low cut. High pass equals low cut. So you're letting the high frequencies pass, right? You're cutting the low frequencies. So this is a filter that's really useful for, you know, taming like, you know, really low end kick drum, or like taming the floor tom frequencies or bass frequencies, or like a really, you know, big synth pad. So that kind of filter is really helpful. And while we're speaking of like a high pass filter, we can also speak to a low shelf, right? So when you're using a high pass filter, right, you're basically going to be cutting off like a hard cutoff at a certain frequency. So you can set that at like 200 hertz or 100 hertz or 40 hertz, wherever that is, wherever you feel that or wherever you hear that that low end's just a little bit too much. But you know, so once you do that, you're not going to have anything below where that cutoff is. Now, a shelf is kind of a nice alternative to that, because you can still reduce the frequencies. Like, so say you apply the shelf starting at like, say, 200 hertz, right? And then you reduce down in decibels the other frequencies below 200. So those frequencies are still there, but you might be dropping them down by like 12 decibels or something, so they're not as, you know, prevalent, right? So that's another way to tame it. And the converse of the high pass filter is the low pass filter. So low pass filter, or LPF, it's the acronym, is basically gonna be a high cut. So you're basically allowing the low frequencies to pass and you're cutting off the high frequencies. Right. So like, yeah, you know, when you guys are recording and you want to, you know, kind of attenuate some of those maybe like harsh, you know, cymbal sounds or something like that, just to kind of create some more room for the vocal or acoustic guitar or something like that, you could use a high pass filter. Right. And the same thing, you could use the high shelf. Right. So whereas you might use the high pass filter to cut off any frequencies above, you know, 7K, you could use the shelf, the high shelf, to basically start attenuating frequencies at 7K, but you still have the 12K, 15K, 20K coming through, but you might want to cut them down by 6 decibels or whatever that is, whatever sounds good.
What are some of the common scenarios where you use a shelf, like, versus the high pass filter, like, or a high shelf or low?
All right, so I'll take an example from something I was just working on in a mix, for example. So I've got this new song, the one I was just playing for you. And in the verses, the snare drum, the higher frequencies in the snare drum were kind of conflicting with the vocals, right? So what I did was I applied a high shelf at around, I think it was around like 2K. And then I basically just brought the rest. It was like a nice kind of like gentle slope down, right? Because you can adjust the cue, right? How you want that shelf to be, very abrupt, or you want it to be a nice gentle slope. So I just did a nice gentle slope down where I reduced those down. It was probably like 8 decibels, like the frequencies above that. And that kind of brought the snare drum back in the mix and allowed the vocal to kind of come out a little bit more.
Yeah.
So that was pretty effective.
Okay.
And then the same thing I did with the kick drum, right? So I was getting some, you know, I didn't want to totally wipe out the low end of the kick. So at about 50 hertz, I just, you know, put a shelf in that was kind of more of an abrupt shelf, right? And then I drop down all those frequencies below that. So just to kind of get that under control.
Okay. Yeah, right? That makes sense. You don't want it to completely disappear. But
yeah. Yeah, but you don't want that, you know, it's like you get into the car and you put it, you think it sounds great in your studio, and you get into the car, it's just, it's just this uncontrollable bass.
Yes.
So, all right. So we got high pass filters. We got low pass filters. We did the high shelf and the low shelf. And now we can talk about, let's talk about a bell filter, right? Or let's talk about bandpass filters and bell filters, all right? So a bandpass filter is going to be like typically where you allow a bunch of frequencies to pass, right? So like, let's say you're working on vocals and you know, like the mid-range frequencies are typically what you want to accentuate with vocals. So let's say you set a bandpass filter, say starting at like 2K to 5K. Let's just use that as an example. So it'll kind of come up, go across that band of frequencies, and then come back down. So it attenuates the frequencies outside of the band and accentuates the frequencies inside the band. So it helps that voice to kind of like pop out of the mix. And then a bell filter is similar to it, but it's more defined as far as the frequency goes. So whereas with a bandpass, you're kind of focusing on like that 2 to 5K, where the bell filter, you might just be specifically focusing on like 2K and like the frequencies kind of like close to it. So it might look something like that, a little bit pointy, and you can adjust the Q out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, more or less, depending on what you want to bring in. And a good way to like use a bell filter, for example, like to figure out what frequency you should be accentuating, right? Or cutting, you can also use it to cut frequencies as well, is to, let's say you're trying to get the bass, right? You've recorded bass and you want the bass to kind of pop out a little bit more, right? So you could just take and just do a bell filter where it's very narrow, right? Where the Q is very narrow, and then just bring that up by about 6 decibels in gain. And you can just listen to the bass track and then just drag that bell filter along back and forth over the frequency range where you want that to kind of pop out. And like, I was just doing that on this mix that I've been working on. And I just found it where I was just like at 800 Hertz was just like, oh, that's kind of like the sweet spot that helped it just kind of pop through that mix a little bit more. So, sorry about that. So that's, you know, one way to use a bell filter. The other way is where, let's say that you're recording acoustic guitar and you've got this frequency that's just kind of, it's just not sitting right. You can take that bell filter instead of, you know, increasing it, drop it down to do a cut by like 6 decibels and drag it across and then kind of, you know, back and forth just to kind of see where that problematic frequency is.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's an annoying buzz or something like that.
Yeah.
And then that kind of leads me into notch filters, like a notch filter. A notch filter is a very narrow focused extreme cut, right? Where you have something that just sounds terrible, you know, might be some kind of like, I don't know what would be a good example.
I do that a lot on guitars that like, I get this hiss at like 4, like, you know, super distorted guitars that like, I guess it's like 4 to 4.5K or so.
Uh-huh.
And it affects the attack a little bit.
Sure.
If I notch that a little bit, but and also there's this like hiss sound that comes through that I
right.
do that with a lot.
So from, was it like an outboard effects pedal that you're using or?
I use most of my effects that are just from Ableton.
Gotcha.
But yeah, just like, you know, a frequency I don't like, I notice is like, you know, around that like 4K range a lot sometimes
right.
with guitars.
So you would just take a notch
yeah.
and just kind of like pinpoint that and just pull it right out.
Yeah, and
yeah.
I know, like, if I do it too much, I like, you know, with too much cue, I guess it doesn't. Well, I don't want to kill all that.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
just,
you're taking out a lot of your mid range.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, that's what's cool about the notch is that you can just get really exact and just get that out without crushing everything, you know, that's to the left and right of it. Right?
Yeah,
that narrow cue.
So if you were setting up a notch filter, would you do it with the bell and then just narrow the Q, or how
no
did you
so
set it up?
For example, if you go into EQ8 in Ableton, if you're looking at, you know, you have like the, I think it's like filters 1 through 8 across the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're the default is bell filter for all of those, and then if you click on that little drop down, then you have the choice of basically the like the high pass filter, the low pass filter, and then you have One of those is the notch filter. It's the one that kind of comes down like a U. That's the notch filter. So you select that, and then that opens it up, and you can see it's just, it goes all the way down. I think it's, I don't know if it's, is it 18 decibels that does that in the graph from zero, or maybe 12? I don't remember exactly what it is, but it goes all the way down to the bottom and just cuts it all.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I only use that if I hear something that's like some resonant frequency, like from a synth or something like that, that's just going on. That's just muddying up the mix. And I'll use that to cut. A lot of times I'll use it on guitars, you know? So I usually only just, it's kind of like just, you know, clearing out, taking out the trash.
Yeah.
You know, it's like getting rid of something that's annoying you in the mix. That's problematic. And let's, so I believe that covers basically the all the filters within EQ8 in Ableton, and the majority of filters that you'd be using in general with any DAW in any type of situation. And the other things, let's just cover the three main controls that you're going to use when you're EQing, right? So you've got the frequency control, which allows you to dial in what frequency that you're going to be working on, right? Boosting or cutting. And then you've got basically the gain control, which is going to determine how much you're increasing the gain or how much you're decreasing the gain. And then you have the Q, which, people ask, where does Q, where does it come from? And I think if I remember correctly, it came from like electronics where it dealt with like quality or quantity. But anyway, so in the context of EQ, it just deals with bandwidth, right? So how wide the bandwidth is or how narrow the bandwidth is. And for whatever reason, it's called the Q. So, and it functions, the more you increase the Q, it's actually an inverse effect. So the more you increase the Q, the narrower the bandwidth becomes. And the more you decrease the Q, going to the left, the wider the bandwidth becomes. So using all three of those controls, the frequency, the gain, and the Q, you can control any frequency you need to within your EQ settings.
Wow. Yeah, I thought I was, I wasn't using the notch filter when I'm doing, I was using a bell filter and just cueing it down for my notches.
Get it to work the same, right? But that when you basically select the notch within EQ8, it drops it down immediately. Because the bell, you have to kind of like narrow it.
Yeah.
And the notch filter is already narrowed and it's drastic.
Yeah.
So you do
it. And then you just make it a little like less extreme or whatever.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
All right. So I think that wraps it up for the pod today.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to cover? You think we missed or anything? Or
no, I think, I do. To identify like bad frequencies, I do that dragging thing.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get better bass sounds, and doing that with bass has helped me a lot.
Bass is always the challenge.
I feel like mine is always got a little, there's like, there'll be a few songs I have where I'm like, the low end sounds great, clean. And I don't know what I did different. Like I'll try and replicate it, and it's.
Well, you, stuff. I mean, so when you get those sounds that you like, right? Are you saving like the effects as a template
then? Yeah, I feel like a lot of it is the EQ with that, but I feel like I'll do the same thing. And it's tough though. Like sometimes we use different bass amp plugins because we don't actually have a bass amp.
Right.
So we're using different bass amp plugins.
Right. But are you guys going directly into your interface when you record the bass?
Most of the time, yeah.
I think what would really help you, and what kind of interface you use, the Scarlett?
Yeah.
What I find helps with the bass sounds for me is using a separate preamp and then go into the interface, right? Not behind the existing preamps, because the Focusrite Claret that I use has got four preamps in there, and then there's four more channels without a preamp. So I'll use an external preamp, which is also a Focusrite. It's the ISA 2 mono preamp. It's like a two-channel mono preamp. So number one, it's mono, right?
Yeah.
So normally if I wasn't using that, I'd have to use a plug-in to throw the bass into mono, which I would always do. So it's mono, which is great for the bass. And I just feel like that preamp helps me get a better sound on the actual bass. So yeah. Maybe that's something you guys could try.
Yeah, that makes an external preamp. So it just gives it some more, you know, like,
yeah, it gives
gain
it some more
attack.
Yeah, and like the kind of like the characteristic that this particular preamp imparts on the tone of the bass is really, it's nice.
Yeah. I would like more of that plucky, like strong tone coming through. I feel like
the more of a mid-rangey. Yeah,
I feel like a lot of it gets muddied up quickly.
Have you ever tried to reamp it going into your guitar amp at all?
We tried that
and then blend it.
Some of the songs we did that with Nunez's amp.
How'd it sound?
They sound pretty good. I don't remember which ones. I have to like go back through,
right?
But from what I hear different things also every time I listen to it.
You know what's cool is there's a Waves plugin called Bass Fingers. It's $29. And like sometimes I'm just having a hard problems getting like a good bass sound. I'll use that plugin. It definitely comes through better. You know, it's... And I think anybody who struggles with getting bass sounds, I'd recommend that plugin.
What is it? Is it like a MIDI bass?
Yeah, it's a MIDI bass, yeah. So you got your little keyboard controller, you've got the plugin, you pull up the plugin, it's got all the parameters you need to, you know, like adjust the mechanical sound of the bass. You know, it's got its own pedal board on there, so if you want to throw on some compression, you know, got like that, you know.
I use a free one called Moto Bass from IK, but you have to fight. You got to fight it to get a good sound. It is free. But
I would recommend Bass Fingers. $29. You cannot go wrong.
Yeah.
Totally worth it.
$29 bass guitar, basically.
Yeah, great bass sounds. Yeah, it sounds really good. And there's, you know, there's a bunch of other plugins out there. None that I could personally vouch for, but because like in Ableton, like their synth bass sounds are good, but trying to get like a real, if you wanted to like emulate a real, like, you know, Fender precision bass or jazz bass, they just don't cut it. They're just not there.
Yeah. Thus, when I use Moto Bass, it like the bass sound I'm getting and usually going for, it's like a modern, like you said, kind of like synth bass, like fuzzy, MGMT thing.
Sure.
I'll do that with
which
it,
I love. The sounds they get.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're great.
But it's not that, like you said, it's not that realistic, plucky bass sound.
Yeah. So, all right. We'll catch you guys in a couple weeks. Peace.
Peace.